Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Would you rather be loved or respected? Kind of depends on the context, doesn't it? I mean, with family and friends, you'd probably choose being loved. Although, for parents, that's a tough call. Fact is, getting both can be a very tricky thing. NBC's hit comedy series The Office was built around that very idea. You know, the boss who wants his employees to love him instead of just respecting him. Well, we're going to talk about a band that's gotten a lot of love, but until last week, very little respect. We've also got live music from Roy Nathanson, founder of the Jazz Passengers here in New York, a group that has numbered Deborah Harry and Elvis Costello among its ranks. Roy's new project combines poetry, jazz, and beatboxing. And the bass guitarist who became a city councilman without losing his indie roots. But let's begin with last week's induction ceremony for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Tom Morello of Rage Against the Machine took the stage at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn to introduce a band that released its first albums 40 years ago.
They are four of the most recognizable faces on the planet and one of the most iconic and badass bands of all time.
Yes, Kiss is in the Hall of Fame. They've got 28 gold records, more than any other American band, and they've sold more than 40 million copies just in the U.S. So Kiss has never lacked for love. Now, though, they have a modicum of respect and just a soupçon of controversy. The Hall announced that only the four original members of Kiss would be inducted. Two of them haven't been in the band for years, so co-founders and current members Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley refused to perform with their former bandmates at the ceremony. Now, however you feel about the drama, or the band in general, there's no denying that Kiss played a role in shaping the history of rock and roll in the late 20th century, with their immediately recognizable costumes and over-the-top performances. They were a touring juggernaut, and that led to the explosive success of their live albums, with songs like Strutter. Detroit Rock City. And of course, today in the studio, I'm joined by one of Kiss's founding members, Paul Stanley, known by the Kiss Army as Starchild. His recently released memoir is called Face the Music, A Life Exposed. Paul, welcome to Soundcheck.
Pleasure to be here.
I want to start the way you start in the book, with you kind of facing the music, be that face in the mirror, putting on the famous Starchild makeup. I mean, you can spend hours sort of parsing the layers of meaning behind masks. How much of who you are as a performer and as a person is represented in that ritual of putting on the makeup?
I think the two are very integrated at this point, but initially I have to say, without even being conscious of it, I was creating a character to live behind. To this day, that character exists, but perhaps much more comfortably with the me that's offstage. I was born deaf in one ear. I have what was called a microtia, which is a condition where you virtually don't have an ear. You have a piece of misshapen cartilage. And not being able to hear on one side makes for a lot of vulnerability and a sense of unease because you can't triangulate. So you can't tell direction of sound, which is much more problematic than one might think.
Now, at what point did you know that it was not just a physical deformity, but an auditory one as well. At what point did you know that you were not hearing what you were supposed to hear?
Well, I don't have an ear canal on that side, so there's no opening. From the time I was little, I couldn't say that I was different than anyone else in terms of what they heard. You don't miss what you don't know other people have. However, the impact of not being able to hear was palpable.
Hmm.
Although I couldn't define what was different, the fact was how I heard made it difficult and problematic in a lot of situations. Plus, having a birth defect means you're under constant scrutiny. People tend to objectify, you know, people who look different and forget that there are people there.
Mm.
So that only compounded everything else.
But it does make it sort of surprising that of all the things, of all the fields of endeavor that you would have gone into, that you chose one so closely tied to hearing,
mm-hmm.
To music, of course. You talk about in the book about some surprisingly diverse musical experiences as a kid, mm-hmm. from Beethoven's Emperor Concerto mm-hmm. to, you know, early rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
Was music, I mean, at what point, you talk about getting your first guitar when you're like 13.
13, yeah.
You know? So at what point did that seem to be a realistic avenue for you to pursue?
I don't know that it was ever a realistic avenue for me to pursue, because people will always tell you that it's impossible. You learn, hopefully, that the people who tell you what's impossible are invariably the ones who failed.
Hmm.
However, as a very young boy, music connected with me on a level that I didn't even understand. The emotional connection of any of the arts can be so thrilling and enthralling and inspiring. Hearing the Emperor Concerto as a kid was monumental to me. It was so majestic and so powerful. Lerner and Lowe, Rodgers and Hart, Rodgers and Hammerstein, Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, the list goes on, Puccini, Verdi. I was very fortunate to be around a lot of music in my house, and what my parents didn't give me, they blessed me with an appreciation of all the arts.
Hmm. So a lot of the names you just mentioned are great names in music theater, where it's not just how the music sounds, but the way it's presented,
mm-hmm.
which would come back, it brings us right back to the way Kiss mm-hmm. would present itself on stage. How did Kiss go from being a band to being, let's face it, more than a band?
Mm-hmm. I tend to say that bands make music and phenomenons impact society. So I think the idea was to be the band we never saw. We were living in a time where many bands thought they were doing the audience a favor by showing up. And that's so peculiar, because I paid for a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm owed your respect and the best that you can possibly give me. I expect you to look good, to sound good, and to show appreciation for me. And then I'll show appreciation for you. So in essence, we came out of the audience, grabbed the instruments and said, let's show you how it's done. And the look was an outgrowth of that. And a lot of the British bands, which I identified with much more than the American bands, Anglophile that I am, I saw all these bands that had a cohesive group image, which was lacking very much in the American bands. I wasn't interested in seeing an overweight guy with pigtails in a band. I wanted to see a rock star.
We are talking with Paul Stanley, founding member of KISS, and of course known fondly by KISS fans as Star Child. KISS celebrating its 40th anniversary this year and, of course, induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And Paul Stanley's memoir is called Face the Music, A Life Exposed. You meet Gene Simmons early on.
Mm-hmm.
You're both in Queens. I didn't see a mention of what neighborhood in Queens.
We met at a friend's house in Inwood in Washington Heights. I was living in Kew Garden Hills,
okay,
and he was living right near the Long Island Expressway. I'm not quite sure what we would call the area, but it was close by.
Like Rego Park or something.
Yeah,
more
Flushing.
Okay.
Yeah, so we met at a common friend's house and didn't hit it off at first, certainly, but we played each other a song or two, and I swore I would never play with the guy again. Nothing's changed.
40 years of, I'll never play with the guy again.
But 44 years at this point speaks volumes. We have a terrific relationship, and it's been volatile.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I've never doubted was his integrity. And we've always been there more or less for each other. I've sometimes doubted or questioned his decisions, and his input always hasn't been 100%. And yet here we are 44 years later.
Right. And the guy knows how to apologize. There's one point in the book where you're doing a record and he's just kind of checked out and he sends you, is it a Porsche?
Yeah.
To say he's so sorry?
Well, it's a nice start, but more than a car, I want a companion. I mm-hmm. want a partner. The car can't write songs. The car can't commiserate and talk with me about things that are going on. It was a nice gesture,
yeah,
but it's certainly no substitute.
So when you were in your mid-20s, things are really beginning. That rocket ship is beginning to take
mm-hmm.
off.
Mm-hmm.
There's a famous story about the composer Philip Glass.
Mm.
You know, he did his opera,
mm-hmm.
Einstein on the
mm-hmm.
Beach, landmark work at the Metropolitan Opera.
Mm-hmm.
The next week, he's back driving his cab,
mm.
and a woman
mm-hmm.
gets in the car, sees his picture and his name, and says, young man, do you know you have the same name as a famous composer?
Mm-hmm.
So your days of driving people in a taxi mm. to Madison Square Garden,
yes,
then replaced by people taking taxis to Madison Square Garden to see you,
yes,
on that stage.
As a cab driver, I drove a couple to Madison Square Garden to see Elvis Presley. And I sat in that front of the cab and thought to myself, one of these days, people will be coming to Madison Square Garden to see me. And it wasn't that many years later.
Well, and not for the only time in the book, you get the sense of you, Paul Stanley, when it begins to happen for you, thinking, oh, God, don't take this away from me
mm-hmm.
now. You know, that worry that mm-hmm. it could all come crashing down at any moment. And it seems like with the song Room Service, that's sort of getting to this kind of set of feelings at this point in your career.
Well, Room Service was a song about reveling in the moment of being the king, you know, to be able to have whatever I want when I want it, to celebrate life sexually and in front of these large crowds musically. It was everything I dreamed and more. When you fantasize what success is in the music field, as I imagine in many, it's limited by your comprehension. As you finally start to experience it, the floodgates open and you see it so much more.
Mm-hmm.
It's overwhelming, but at the same time, it's also invigorating and it's a rush unlike anything else.
Baby, I could use a meal. Room service.
If you want to.
Written in the first flush of success, Kiss with Room Service from their 1975 album Dressed to Kill. My guest on Soundcheck is Paul Stanley, star child to Kiss fans, and his new memoir is called Face the Music, A Life Exposed. 1975 in New York, you know, punk is just, I mean, the first bands are playing at CBGBs, but the New York Dolls have been on the scene. We were really in the
midst of what they were calling the glitter movement, you know, glam, so to speak. We were really not part of the scene. We were the black sheep of the black sheep. While other bands were spending their time in clubs looking like bands, we were in a loft trying to sound like a band. So we didn't have much in common. We didn't go to Max's Kansas City. We weren't at the Mercer Arts Center. We were locked away 5 or 7 days a week trying to form and formulate what we were going to be.
Mm-hmm. And the results, this album, Dressed to Kill, contained, you know, some massive songs, Rock and Roll All Night, which has become a kind of rock and roll anthem, and which has given rise to one of the great Mondegreens or misheard lyrics of all time, which is, I want to rock and roll all night.
And part of every day.
And part of every day.
Well, that may be healthier, but I don't know how many people.
Because, you know, that laundry isn't going to do itself.
No. Yeah, I see the practicality in it, but it's not quite as much fun.
You show us everything you got. You keep on dancing and the room gets hot. Drive us wild, we'll drive you crazy. You say you wanna go for a spin. The party's just begun, we'll let you in. You drive us wild, we'll drive you crazy.
When you were writing that song, no one ever thinks, well, if I write this line this way, people are going to mishear it as that.
No, never. Any more than the Hendrix song, Purple Haze, Excuse Me While I Kiss This Guy.
Right, or There's a Bathroom on the Right, the Creedence Clearwater Revival song.
Yeah, so.
Although John Fogerty has admitted, here and elsewhere, that he will occasionally sing the line, There's a Bathroom on the Right, just to kind of screw with his listeners' minds.
Fogerty runs by my house almost daily.
Really?
He jogs. It's God love him, man. The guy is gallant in his running every day. But I said to him, John, I see you running, and I want to open the door and say, come on, get in, because he looks like he's about to keel over.
Well, you look like you're in pretty good shape, do you?
I mean,
you know, being on the road, first of all, is a test of stamina and endurance as well as musicality.
Well, what we do demands athleticism and endurance and a cardio level that a lot of other people don't have to adhere to or it doesn't necessitate. So I'm in damn good shape.
Yeah.
And
so what's your routine? What do you do?
I'm now doing something that I hadn't done before. I go to a class called Cardio Bar, which is a dancer workout, which was started by a man who was in an accident, had to stop his ballet career. And it's the routine that he used to rehabilitate himself. And I go 3-4 times a week. My wife goes, and it's great to be in a room full of great-looking women and know that you don't want to look like a jerk. So it motivates me to do things that I might find physically impossible.
And then when you get out on stage, you can still do all the moves?
Totally, totally, totally. It's a terrific thing to be at this point in my life. 40 years ago, I couldn't have imagined it, but to be 61, I believe I'm 61. I get it mixed up sometimes. But to be 61 and be out there and enjoying the moments and reveling in the glory in front of 10 to 100,000 people. It's terrific.
Paul Stanley is my guest on Soundcheck, founding member of KISS, known to KISS fans as Starchild. KISS is celebrating its 40th anniversary this season, touring around. There's Paul Stanley's new memoir called Face the Music, A Life Exposed. It is out now. And there is the matter of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction. You guys have been eligible for, like, what, 15 years now?
It's going on 15 years.
I mean, is it a bittersweet moment? I mean, is it, you know, is it justice deferred? Is it justice denied kind of thing?
Honestly, it's not bittersweet because there's no vindication in it to me. All it is a certain closure for fans, and I'm pleased for that because it means something to the fans, to people who've championed us against odds. It's a sense of validation. If they understood, and they do more and more because I'm fairly vocal about it, what the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame actually is, it doesn't hold quite as much weight. It's a small boys club. It's not the Hall of Fame of the people. That's why when you hear about who's getting inducted half the time, you don't know who they are because it's not based on popularity or how much you may have influenced your field. It's purely based on favoritism and personal interests. Did I make myself clear?
Yes. And I guess my follow-up question then would be, why accept it?
Because it's important to the fans. And I understand it totally. And I would consider that to be disrespectful to them. It would also be disrespectful to not be honest with them. There's no reason for former members to put on a uniform that I think that they denigrated or compromised for the name of nostalgia, or certainly not for why would the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame be somebody who I would do that for when they are taking us in grudgingly and only the original four members, when we have members who played on multi-platinum albums, did million-selling tours, and yet the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is making it the smallest pill they can swallow because it's very bitter for them.
Well, like it or not, Paul Stanley and the rest of KISS are now in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The induction ceremony was last week, April 10th, and Paul Stanley's new memoir out now is called Face the Music, A Life Exposed. Thank you for sharing some of it with us.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Soundcheck is a production of WNYC in New York. Find out more about our show at soundcheck.org or just download the new WNYC mobile app. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.